Questions and Answers on the Bible. Chapter 98. A Personal Devil. A friend and myself were talking about Satan a few days ago. He holds the opinion that there is no such spiritual being as Satan, but that man's mind being evil, that is what leads him to sin, and that there is no other tempter. He quotes the temptation of our first parents as the foundation of his argument, as no spiritual being known as Satan is mentioned in that connection. As there is such a diversity of opinion, I should esteem it a favor if you would take up this important question at an early date. This is indeed an important question, and intensely practical, one that personally concerns everyone. Ignorance of the reality of the tempter, and of his methods, and consequently of how to resist him, has been the rule of many, but it is not necessary for us to be ignorant of his devices. The Bible gives us full information concerning him, plainly teaching that there is an evil spirit, a real personality, called Satan. Satan the serpent in Eden. Let us begin with the basis of your friend's argument, the temptation of our first parents. True, the record in Genesis, being very brief, does not describe the person of the tempter, but it does clearly teach us that a real, visible creature, having the form of a serpent, addressed Eve, and beguiled her with lies. Read the whole of the third chapter of Genesis. Now with that read, and there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels with him. Here we find that the one who tempted Eve was Satan in the form of a serpent. This shows not only that he is a real being, but that, to use your expression, he is a spiritual being. That is, he is a spirit, the same as the heavenly angels, of whom he once was one. Being a spirit, he can assume various forms, making himself visible or invisible at will. As the Spirit of God manifested himself in the form of a dove, so this evil spirit revealed himself as a serpent. But Satan, the deceiver, does that which the Spirit of truth will not do. He often assumes the forms of other intelligent beings, not only of angels of light, but of men, making people believe that they see and communicate with their dead friends. The accuser of the brethren. Reading farther in the 12th chapter of Revelation, we find that Satan is the accuser of the brethren, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony. And great trouble is brought to the earth, because the devil is come to its inhabitants, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time, like a roaring lion. A warning against the real tempter. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about, seeking whom he may devour. This cannot apply to the evil disposition of any man. Meeting with the sons of God. With the last two texts quoted, the one which speaks of Satan as the accuser of the brethren, and this which says that he walks about as a roaring lion, seeking to devour whomsoever he can, read the story of Job in the first and second chapters of that book. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence come you? Then Satan answered the Lord, and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. Then when God called Satan's attention to Job, he began to accuse him, saying that he served God only for gain. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only upon himself put not forth your hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord, seeking to kill Job. Again we read that after coming to another assembly of the sons of God, and accusing Job, Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord, and smote Job with sore boils. Here we have something besides man's evil disposition. We see that Satan is as real a being as the sons of God. In keeping with his character, he accused Job before God, and tried to kill him. From this we should learn that our only safety lies in God's protecting care. If we take ourselves out of his hand, our lives are not for a moment secure against the attack of Satan. Thus we see how significant is that just before the Apostle Peter warns us that our adversary, the devil, goes about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, he tells us to cast all our care upon God, saying, He cares for you, tempting Christ. Take the case of the temptation of Christ. He had no evil disposition, but he was tempted by the devil. It is impossible to deny that Satan is a real being, without denying the reality of the temptation of Jesus. We read that after trying to get Jesus to make bread of stones, the devil took him up into the holy city and set him on a high pinnacle of the temple. Again, the devil took him up into an exceeding high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and said unto him, All these things will I give you, if you will fall down and worship me. Then Jesus said unto him, Get hence, Satan, for it is written, You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. Then the devil left him, but only for a season. Many times Satan sought to seduce and destroy the Savior, but was unsuccessful. No one who believes this account of the temptation of Jesus can avoid believing that Satan is a real being, with wonderful power. As before stated, Jesus had no evil disposition, but even if he had, an evil disposition could not carry him from the wilderness to the top of the temple in Jerusalem, or to the top of a high mountain, and show him the kingdoms of the earth, and beg to be worshipped, bound and destroyed. One more out of the multitude of references to Satan must suffice for the present. In the 20th chapter of Revelation we read these words of John in prophetic vision, And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. And when 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth, and compassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven, and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone. Here we have the account of the final disposition of Satan. But from first to last we see that he is described as a person in evil spirit, as real as are any of the angels who are sent forth to do service for those who shall inherit salvation. Only his purpose is to destroy instead of to save, enticed through his own lust. But your friend is impatient to ask what is meant by the statement that every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. James 1 verse 14. He wishes to ask how this can be reconciled with the idea of a personal tempter. Well, even if I were obliged to say that I do not know, that would not invalidate the scriptures that we have already read, nor would it show that this text is out of harmony with them. It would merely show my lack of knowledge. However, I am glad to be able to help you in this case also, for I find no difficulty in it. You must bear in mind that Jesus was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. He knew no sin. Therefore we know that to be tempted is not a sin. But the possession of an evil mind is sin. Therefore it is effectually settled that Jesus was not tempted by an evil disposition, divers lusts and pleasures. We must first learn that the word lust does not necessarily always mean sin. The word simply means desire or pleasure, and the desire may be for that which is good as well as for that which is evil. We have the word direct from the Scandinavian and German languages, in which it is still in common use in a good sense. For example, the first psalm, in both German and Danish, reads that the man is blessed who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of the scornful, but he has lust to the law of the Lord. That sort of lust is certainly lawful. It is only when one lusts after evil things, and is ruled and corrupted by his lust, that sin comes in. This is made plain in where we read that when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. There is in this such a wonderful lesson, so strengthening and elevating, that we must study it together for a few minutes, and then think of it for a long time. Let us first consider this word, lust, a little further, the Greek word from which it is translated, where it is rendered desire. Thus, Jesus sat down in the upper room with his 12 apostles, and he said unto them, With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you. Also Paul says that he has a desire, lust, to depart, and to be with Christ. The verb from which the noun is derived, where we read that the angels desire, have lust, to look into the things which are preached to us in the gospel. So we see that a person may have lust to that which is good, and that such lust is not sin, tempted but sinless. And now we come back to the wonderful lesson taught by the temptation of Jesus. It presents to us the possibility of a life of holiness that is most glorious to contemplate. Christ was tempted in all points, like as we are, yet without sin. Every man is tempted, when he is drawn away of his own lust, and enticed. And not till lust has conceived does it bring forth sin. But you say, we often desire evil things. That is true, but such desire is sin itself, and not merely temptation to sin. The thought of foolishness is sin. The law is spiritual, and is exceeding broad, covering not merely the outward act of transgression, but the secret purpose, or even the desire to transgress. Such desire Jesus never had for. He did no sin, no sin. Yet he was tempted. Now I hear your friend exclaim, surely, Jesus was not enticed by his own lusts. Well, I am glad to hear your friend say even this, for it shows at least that he has given up the idea that the tempter is one's evil disposition. But if you will consider the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, you will see that he was indeed enticed by his own lawful desires, or lusts. That is to say, the devil tempted him through them. Therein lay the strength of the temptation, and Jesus could have been tempted in no other way, for he had no evil desires. According to the strength of the temptation resisted, is the power of Jesus to deliver us when we are tempted. Lawful desires not gratified. Three distinct temptations are recorded, and they are typical, covering every possible phase of temptation. Jesus had fasted 40 days, and was hungry. Then the devil tempted him on the side of appetite. Command that these stones be made bread. Jesus had a desire for bread, and that desire was perfectly lawful. He also had the power to produce bread even from stones. But he would not use his power for the gratification of even his own lawful desires. Afterward, when a multitude of hungry people were in the desert, he used his power to produce bread for them, but he would not gratify his own desires. He waited for his hunger to be satisfied, till the devil had left him, and the angels of God came and ministered unto him. The same angels are sent to serve us, if we will allow them, instead of trying to help ourselves. Taking our cue from Christ's trust in God to provide him food, Satan attempted to induce him to presume upon God's care. It was right for Jesus to trust the Father, and it was lawful for him to desire to be out of Satan's power. But Jesus would not make any effort to take himself out of the place where the Spirit of God had led him. The third and most audacious temptation was the most cunningly devised of all, for Jesus had come to this earth for the express purpose of gaining dominion over it. Satan took advantage of Christ's lawful desire to tempt him to do a thing that was plainly sinful. How subtle and how great the temptation was, we can never know, but Jesus withstood it. God had said that he himself would give him the kingdom, and Jesus would not consider any other way of getting it. Thus, he worshipped and served God only. Christ pleased not himself. What do these temptations illustrate? Just this, that even Christ pleased not himself. He thought not of himself, even when he was in heaven, in the form of God, but emptied himself. He gave himself for us. That is the law of heaven, the law that sustains the universe, the giving up of self to please others. Jesus pleased not himself, but said, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work. And I do always those things that please him. We have not wandered from the subject, but are learning a practical lesson of great importance from it. Satan fell because he cherished an unlawful desire, and his purpose is to induce everybody to think only of himself. Christ, on the other hand, resisted the desire to please himself, even in the gratification of lawful desires, thus showing how much greater is his power than Satan's. This is the power he offers us, and the possession of it marks one as every inch a king, instead of serving divers lusts and pleasures. Thus being the slave of his desires, he is the ruler of them. He makes pleasure wait upon him, instead of waiting on pleasure. He who can deny himself even a lawful pleasure, patiently waiting till he receives it at God's hands, no matter how long the time of waiting, is safe from all evil. The greater includes the less. The man who can say to his body when it clamors for lawful food and drink, you must wait my time, for I am master, and I am not to be driven, will have no difficulty in abstaining from evil things, pleasure and privation. But you ask, is life then to be one continual penance? Does Christianity mean the repression and extinction of every joyful emotion or enjoyment of pleasure? Far from it. It means the finding and the constant enjoyment of the highest, keenest pleasure. It means joy in God through our Lord Jesus Christ. But this highest pleasure is found only in not pleasing ourselves. Divine and blessed paradox. God is the exceeding great reward of His faithful ones. When we learn that only in His presence is fullness of joy, and that our joy can be full only as Christ's life of self-denial is in us, we can say, "The Lord is the portion of my inheritance, and of my cup, you maintain your law. The lines are fallen unto me in pleasant places. Yeah, I have a goodly heritage. Whom have I in heaven? And when I have you, I have no desire, lust, for anything on the earth." He who can with his whole heart say this, is safe from the seductions of Satan. And Satan but brings sure destruction of himself in seeking to devour such a one. "Because your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. Thus will I bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness. And my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips, when I remember you, in the night watches. Because you have been my help, therefore in the shadow of your wings will I rejoice. My soul follows hard after you, your right hand upholds me. But those that seek my soul to destroy it, shall go into the lower parts of the earth. Here is joy for the sorrowing, rest for the weary, food and drink for the hungry and thirsty, health for the afflicted, deliverance for the tempted, and life for the dead. Happiness and self-forgetfulness. Part of the lesson drawn from the temptation of Christ in the Editor's Private Corner. This week is thus stated by Booker T. Washington in his story of his life work in Up from Slavery. "In order to be successful in any kind of undertaking, I think the main thing is for one to grow to the point where he completely forgets himself. That is, to lose himself in a great cause. In proportion as one loses himself in this way, in the same degree does he get the highest happiness out of his work. Everybody who has observed at all can bear witness that the most unhappy people in the world are those who are continually thinking of themselves. There is nothing else equal to the great love and work of God for absorbing the mind and employing all the energy, and therefore nothing else can give perfect happiness."